Welcome to OperaVore, a show for opera know-it-alls, opera newbies, and unabashed opera lovers, like composer John Kander.
Welcome and bienvenue. Welcome. Fremder, étranger, stranger. Glücklich zu sehen, je suis enchanté. Happy to see you, bleibe rest to stay.
John Kander is best known for Cabaret, Chicago, and Kiss of the Spider Woman, three shows he wrote with his partner Fred Ebb. I'm Naomi Lewin. As much as John Kander loves Broadway, he's really passionate about opera, and he tells OperaVore's Marilyn Horn it all started with the radio.
Well, this sounds kind of weird, I guess, but I, like a lot of people, when I was a kid, I started listening to the Met broadcasts.
Of course.
When I was seven, I guess, because I can remember Bidou Sayal's first Manon. Somebody had given me a book of stories of the operas, and I used to try and follow the action with the singing, and I was overwhelmed by the idea that you could actually tell stories in song. Popular music then was also 50% musical theater, and so I didn't really think of any difference when I would listen to an opera or I would hear a musical or listen to records. It was all the same thing. It was all about creating people with words and music. So I fell in love. And
absolutely one could.
Oh, you bet.
Did you know her later on?
No, I never met her, but I got to see her when I was at Oberlin, as a matter of fact. When the Met tour came in, and I saw her as Susanna and as Zerlina. But the image still in my head of Sayal and Pinza standing next to each other was like I died and went to heaven.
Of course.
Brazilian soprano Bidou Sayal and Italian bass Ezio Pinza in La Ci Darem la Mano from Mozart's Don Giovanni. Ezio Pinza won a Tony Award when he crossed over to the Broadway stage to create the role of Emile Debec in South Pacific. John Kander has won three Tony Awards. Marilyn Horn asked him if he was ever tempted to cross over from musical theater.
Tell me, would you ever like to write an opera?
I was a musical schizophrenic.
Yeah.
When I was at Columbia, Douglas Moore, who was the head of the department, I was getting my master's, and he and I became very, very close friends. And his family really became my family for a long time. And one drunken night, I didn't know which way to go. One drunken night, Douglas said, you know, I think if I had it to do all over again, I'd write for Broadway.
Oh.
And that was sort of the kick in the ass I needed. I think that as much as I am an opera sicky person, I think that's not what I do. One good thing about the form that I work in is that it allows you to be as expansive as you want. So if to say that a moment is operatic, for instance, in Spider Woman, it's filled with trios and quartets and extended stuff. I think I'm just scared. I really am. For my thesis at Columbia, I wrote a one-act opera. And it was torture because all the time it was like a billboard on the top of my head going, opera, opera, you're right, opera. And what came out was sort of second-rate Stravinsky, third-rate Menotti. It was like somebody said something about another composer once that everything he ever heard went in one ear and stayed there. That was me.
Have you ever borrowed music from opera in any of your writing?
Have I ever borrowed it?
Borrowed, you know.
Stolen? Yes, yes, I did, as a matter of fact.
Stolen,
In Kiss of the Spider Woman, there's a whole movie. I mean, this is all very conscious. The leading character is telling us about a movie in which the heroine sacrifices herself for her lover. And at the beginning of it is the beginning of the Mahler Fourth Symphony. I mean, it's Stolen, and then they're just quotes all the way through it, like some operatic, some not. What you try not to do is to borrow them without knowing that you're borrowing. But that can happen.
This is Opera Vore. Marilyn Horne's guest is Broadway composer John Kander, who confessed there was something he'd always wanted to tell her.
Of all the Carmens I've ever seen, you had the single sexiest moment on stage as Carmen that I have ever seen. And I talk about it all the time.
I've never heard it. Let me hear it.
Well, it's – and I've always wondered how
if
it came
I was
about.
That sexy, right?
No, that's later in the discussion. It was the habanera. You moved hardly at all. You came downstage sort of – there would be a step like every 24 bars. And it was all concentrated. And it was overwhelming to me. Still, I have never seen anybody do that. Every Carmen that I've seen seems to try to figure out, what am I going to do with this long thing?
But I'm delighted and frankly amazed that it was in the habanera.
It was in the habanera, and you kept your eyes on him. And I think the stage, it was kind of at an angle, and it was absolutely riveting, and it was the hottest thing I've ever seen.
Il revient, et quoi nous tenir dit
have any memorable nights at the Met, other than me being sexy, of course?
I have some.
You must have some. You know, the rumor is that you live there.
Really? I was just so thrilled to get when I got to a point where I could afford to go. But I've had some moments in the opera house that I'll never forget. Not all of them at the Met, but I was thinking one of the moments in the opera house, in this case it was City Opera, it was the last act of Louise with Carol Nublet.
Carol?
It was like she was born to play that part.
Absolutely.
And I've never, ever seen anybody else who could do
it. What a wonderful singer she was, too, and what a fabulous voice.
But it was as if she became that person. The last act of Louise, Virgil Thompson called the last act of Louise the most shocking family quarrel in all of opera. That's one of those pieces that has everything as far as musical theater in terms of, and the characters are rich and full. And the last act is this incredible family quarrel, which is devastating. I wish I could see it again.
You heard Beverly Sills, Mignon Dunne, and José Van Damme in an excerpt from Charpentier's opera, Louise. Have you been listening closely to today's show? Then you have all the answers to the OperaVore quiz at wqxr.org/OperaVore. This is OperaVore from WQXR. I'm Naomi Lewin. Welcome back to OperaVore and Marilyn Horne's conversation with Broadway composer and opera fan John Kander. He keeps close track of how singers act as well as how they sing.
Another performance I remember was, I guess, in the newest Carmen, when Jonas Kaufmann played the first act, and Carmen is playing with him. And there was something, because he too is like one of these people who really concentrates, and you really wanted to say to her, don't mess around with this guy.
Jonas Kaufmann with the flower song from Bizet's Carmen. John Kander is a man of the theater, and that's his perspective when it comes to opera. As he told Marilyn Horne, there's a devastating little dramatic moment in La Boheme that often gets overlooked.
people know Boheme on all sorts of levels. But if you really read what those people are saying to each other and the emotions that are being expressed, they're so direct and original, and so that original in the sense that each one of those characters is a real person. And there is in the last act a moment that always, always makes me cry. And it's nobody ever mentions it. And it's when Musetta comes back with the muff and gives it to Mimi. And she puts her hands in and she says, "Oh, how wonderful. No,
come bello e morbido. Rapido.
Non più. Right. No more will my hands be closed." Then she says, "Did you give it to me, to Rodolfo?" And Musetta says, "Yes." And he starts to cry. And she's saying, "Why are you crying?" Well, he's crying because he didn't. That's, to me, almost a perfect moment of musical theater. Often they don't play it, what I think, properly, because he starts to cry. Well, a lot of Rodolfo's play it like just a good old Italian tenor crying. That's not why he's crying. He's crying because he's so guilty and ashamed that he couldn't give her anything.
Because he didn't have any money, right?
But also he didn't think of it. He did. There's a lot to that moment. And then she chides him when he's crying.
And she says, "You're..."
Oh, and, no, she says...
"Spendthrift."
Yes.
Right?
"Oh, you spendthrift. You shouldn't have done it." And that was... I mean, that's a killer moment of words being sung and creating characters in real life.
Victoria de Los Angeles and Jussi Björling in the final scene of Puccini's La Bohème. Interestingly enough, John Kander finds a similarity between Puccini and Wagner.
Puccini was a master at finding choosing just the words and phrases from his libretti that made the scene work. So was Wagner. The text and the setting of the text in Meistersinger is like Bohème. Those people are so real and sometimes so petty. It's amazing to me how it's hard to find the right word for him because he's a terrible user. He's full of prejudices and full of himself, and yet he was able to create what is maybe the most compassionate music drama I've ever heard, which is Meistersinger.
Who was the greatest Hans Sachs, for instance?
Well,
that you
saw. Well, the Sachs I grew up with was all those recordings of Shore. I don't always go back and compare people, but there's something perfect about the sound of his voice and who that character is. I think the greatest Hans Sachs I ever saw was probably Tao Adam.
kann's nicht behalten, doch auch nicht vergessen, und fass ich es ganz, kann ich's nicht messen, doch wie voll ich auch messen, was du lebst, ich mir schied. Kein Riegel wollte da passen, doch kein Fehler es war so alt und war doch so neu wie sah ihm süße Neu wer ihn wird und wagen wird sein.
An excerpt from Act One of Wagner's Die Meistersinger, sung by German bass baritone Theo Adam, a favorite of John Kander. He was Marilyn Horne's guest today on Opera Vore. Next week's live broadcast from the Met is Massenet's Werther, which runs nearly 3 hours. Here's Jeff Spurgeon with everything you need to know about it in just 3 minutes.
The first thing to know about Werther is that it's spelled the same as those wonderful little caramel candies that you must never unwrap in the opera house, because there is no 80-piece orchestra in the world louder than the cellophane on a Werther's. And don't unwrap another one or I'll call the usher. Now, the opera Werther, is based on a book by Johann Goethe, the German literary icon. And the story begins with a group of children and their father rehearsing a Christmas carol. In July. Just follow along, okay? The father is a widower, and those motherless children are taken care of by Charlotte, their older sister and de facto mom. She's getting a night off to attend a ball with a very sensitive young man named Werther. He exults in the beauty of nature and the joy of domestic tranquility, but when he feels down, he feels really down. Charlotte and Werther return from the ball, and Werther declares to Charlotte that he's in love with her, and she is completely charmed. Then Charlotte's father arrives and mentions that Albert has returned. Albert? For a moment, the dutiful Charlotte had forgotten she's engaged to be married. When Werther learns that his new beloved is engaged to someone else, he leaves in despair. In Act Two, it's autumn, and Charlotte and Albert have been married for 3 months. All the villagers are gathered for a celebration, and everyone is happy, except Werther. He's still completely miserable because Charlotte is not his. Maybe he'll feel better in Acts 3 and 4. You do know we're at the opera, don't you? Act 3. Okay, now it's Christmas time. Charlotte is at home alone, rereading Werther's letters. She can't forget him, and he shows up, still obsessed with her. They admit their love, but Charlotte chooses duty and honor to Albert over passion. Werther says, Charlotte has pronounced my doom. My grave can be opened. He runs out. In comes Albert, and then a servant with a message from Werther. It says, I'm leaving on a long journey. Can I borrow your pistols? Albert gives them to the servant to give to Werther. Charlotte, suddenly realizing exactly what journey Werther intends to take, rushes out. In the final act, in Werther's study, Charlotte arrives, but too late. Werther has shot himself and is mortally wounded, although, typical with opera characters, the last things to go are the lungs and larynx. He and Charlotte once again confess their love, and as children again sing the Christmas carol we heard when his love for Charlotte began, Werther dies, and the curtain falls. Goethe's novel, one of the early flowers of the Romantic movement, is reported to have inspired numerous actual suicides by men like Werther, sensitive to the glory of love but unable to bear its pain. But in the opera house, even when romance kills, we always come back for more.
Jeff Spurgeon with a 3-minute synopsis of Massenet's Werther. You'll hear that next Saturday, live from the Met. OperaVore comes from WQXR in New York. It's supported in part by the Thompson Family Foundation and the Monteforte Foundation. The show is produced by Elaine Warner with Bill Bowen and Jessica Kiger. For more information about the music on today's program, go to wqxr.org/OperaVore. Next week, Deborah Voigt and Brian Zeger with an insider's take on what makes a good voice recital. I'm Naomi Lewin. Thanks for listening.